From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. This is the Steve Malzberg Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, folks, welcome aboard. It's 9 p.m. here on the East Coast of the United States on Thursday. I can't believe it's Thursday already. And you know what day and time it is wherever you are listening to the Steve Malzberg Show on TNT. And I told you last night to brace yourself for what we have for you today. And I hope you're braced. So if you're standing up, you might want to sit down. If you sit down, you might want to lie back. It's not a laughing matter by any stretch of the imagination. My guest, who is Mia Cathell, investigative reporter for townhall.com. And you should all check out all of Mia's work and all the other stuff on townhall.com. She has a four-part series on that site. And basically, and let me give you the less than elevator version. This is really a quick summary. An LGBT activist couple is accused of sodomizing their young adoptive sons, who are now 9 and 11 years old, and distributing homemade porn of the abuse. And in some instances, inviting others to partake of their adopted sons. There's so many questions here. I mean, they've been charged with all kinds of horrific and appropriate charges, but there's all kinds of questions and there's a lot more to this story. And Mia, welcome aboard. Appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, Steve. Really appreciate the opportunity to speak tonight.
I mean, that you should be, everybody out in the audience by now should be saying, oh, yeah, I saw her on Fox. I saw her on CNN. I saw her on MSNBC. Yeah, I know about this. But of course, with the exception of Fox, possibly, that's never going to happen. And it's very, very sad. Talk a little bit about, give us an overview from part one, if you will, before we get to asking the other questions of parts 2, 3, and 4. How you found out about this and what you know and what we know.
Yes. So this media blackout that you were describing, since the co-defendants were arrested in July last year, that was an indicator that there was a lot more digging to be done. And these far left LGBT activists who were adopted fathers, they are now charged with a slew of felony child sex offenses, ranging from sodomy to incest to felony prostitution of a minor. And so there are two other men in the area who are accused of being solicited by the adoptive fathers to engage in an act of prostitution with their now 11-year-old child. So I'm closely covering this criminal case as it plays out in Georgia. There's a motion hearing next week. Are we covering it live? And it looks like they're getting ready to go to trial.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask you that, and I'm glad because I was going to ask you, do you think there will actually be a trial or will they be offered some plea deal? But you do believe this will go to trial. I'm going to play first in a minute or two some sound that was recorded in jailhouse conversations by a relative of one of the defendants. But before I do that, what kind of defense can they possibly offer? When you talk about posting videos online, when you talk about soliciting others to partake of sex with your 11-year-old, to be bragging about you having sex with your 11-year-old son, I mean, what kind of defense is there to say not guilty?
Yeah, it's hard to think of a defense when they've pled not guilty so far. There's taped video confessions, both of them admitting to heinous crimes, admitting to sexually abusing their son, to recording it, to storing it on their phone. And so right now they're jointly indicted as co-defendants, and the district attorney's office has filed a motion to sever them so that they could have limited immunity to testify against each other at separate trials. So that's something that could potentially play out.
Well, and let me ask you an interesting question. At least I think it's interesting. If they're, and I assume they are, maybe I'm wrong, are they married?
Yes, they are married men.
Okay, well, a husband cannot testify against his wife and vice versa. So does that apply to gay couples?
That's a very interesting point. I haven't thought about that at all, given that the DA's office has filed these motions and believes that they could testify against each other and be held in contempt of court if they refuse to do so.
Yeah, well, we'll keep I'm sure you'll keep an eye on that. And by the way, I want you to come back once as this progresses, when they have the hearing and if there's a trial, if you would, I'd love to keep our audience updated firsthand on all of this. And the two people here in question are William Dale Zulock Jr., 33 years old, and Zach Jacoby Zulock, 35 years old, who the latter, I believe, was arrested. Well, they were both arrested on July of 2002, as you said. But one of them, and maybe I'm wrong, I think it was Zachary, was accused, not charged, but was accused of doing something similar about 7 years ago, correct?
That's correct. Part three of my investigation revealed how there was a 2011 case where Zachary was previously accused of raping a 14-year-old boy in the same county, but he was never charged. So I assume, since there was no documentation other than the police incident report, that it was never brought up during their background checks in the adoption paperwork.
Well, we're going to get to that adoption agency as well. But I want to play first for the folks. This is William Dale Zulock on being arrested. Again, this is a jailhouse talk he was having with a relative who I believe made these tapes public. Is that correct? Is that how they were gotten? A relative made them public?
That's correct. It was a concerned family member.
Okay, so here's William Dale Zulock, 33 years old, on the arrest, cut number 325.
They slammed him on the floor. And I hate to say this, but I don't sleep in clothes, so they arrested me in my bed naked, put me in a cruiser with no clothes. I sat in the back of that cruiser from 11:30 to about 4 a.m. naked in the backseat of that cruiser while they searched our house for God knows what. They seized the house, everything inside of it, all of our cars on the property. They took our house because they think there was extra money coming in from somewhere. And we're like in our 30s and we have this big giant house and they didn't think we could afford it.
I mean, he seems very concerned with sitting naked in the car and them taking his property. More so than the mess they're in. Now, let me go on here to the next cut. This is if I'm reading my own writing correctly, a relative talking about the guy who turned them in, asking about a guy who turned them in, and then we'll get the answer from William as well. Cut 326.
I mean, can I ask you, does this guy know you at all, or some random thing he's just trying to, rat somebody? Can I ask you that, or?
So last time he was here, I told him something, and I wrote him down something, gave it to him. It's something around those lines, but more.
And they called me out front again for fingerprints, and I saw the new charges that they're putting against, I'm assuming, both of us. There's 17 charges.
Okay, 17 charges, as you mentioned. So tell us about how they got turned in. Obviously, it was from someone who they had had over their house, and he says he told them something. He didn't tell the relative what he told them, but how did that all come about?
Yes, so this other suspect, Hunter Lawless, he was arrested previously in the day for allegedly downloading child pornography of one of the Zulock boys. And so police executed a search warrant on his house and seemed that it scared him. And he snitched on the Zulocks and he told them he met Zachary through Grindr. It's a gay dating app. And he received these messages where Zachary was bragging about sexually abusing his son, where he allegedly sent the child pornography. And so that's how police made the connection. And within hours before midnight was when the SWAT team launched an armed raid on the mansion. That's when the boys were rescued and placed back into foster care. That's where William was describing how he was hauled out of the house naked and Zachary was tackled to the ground. And you can see a bruise in his one mugshot.
Yeah. Let's talk about Zachary. We'll hear his voice in a second. But this Zachary, when you said about having sex with his son or whatever, at one point on Snapchat, if I'm correct, he allegedly put out there, stand by. And he said the word, I'm effing my son. I mean, is that accurate?
Yes, that's what's quoted in the court documents. It's quoted in a criminal arrest affidavit. And wow, just to think, you know, that a father would say this about his child, would brag about the sexual abuse. And it's just evil, evil in the worst way.
Unbelievably evil. We're talking to Mia Cathell, investigative journalist at townhall.com, about a suburban porno ring, and not porno, pedophile ring. She did a 4-part series on this. And what town was this in? What city?
This was in Oxford, Georgia. The other two men were in Loganville, Georgia. So these are suburbs outside of Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So now we're going to hear from the talk is asking about the kids. And I was under the impression that we may have had a cut here that involved Zach Jacoby Zulak, who bragged about effing his son. But I'm not sure at this point. So let's just go to 327.
I mean, are you worried about the boys, of where they are, or?
I mean, yeah, but I can't talk. I definitely can't talk about that.
I don't want to say it, but brace yourself for the truth, okay? Just don't give up on us. You talk to Zach, tell him I still love him.
So he's telling his relative, he doesn't really have much to say about the boys or concern about where they are, or he won't say it, but then he says to the relative, brace yourself for the truth, which is very, very interesting. Are these tapes admissible in the trial? Do you know?
I believe so. Police have these recordings. They have any kind of correspondence because they're given digital tablets behind bars that they can message from whenever they please. So I believe all of this, if the police have it, it's their property that they're able to use it because they are very paranoid right now about any kind of communication, as in the co-defendants that they've been telling family members, and they're worried about the lawyer, and they would only accept in-person visits with the attorney.
All right, so let's move on to part two, and you might have touched on this already, but part two, the headline of part two is just how big was the operation led by this LGBTQ couple. I'm sure you left out a couple of pluses and other letters, but that's okay with me, who abused their adopted sons. And abused is, of course, it's alleged, but that what's alleged is a lot further than abused. How wide was this? And if we know that these two were doing this, and if it's true that they were advertising it and inviting people over to participate, I mean, how widespread could this possibly be?
So Zachary admitted to sending the child pornography to less than a dozen people. This is, of course, what he's willing to confess. And the district attorney said there are still suspects out there. While they're under investigation, they're still circulating videos of these abused boys. So I think it's far reaching. I don't know how wide, and part two really does explore how big of an operation it was, since these men took the boys on excessive trips. They were staying at Airbnbs everywhere outside of the state, all across America. And so it really just lets the imagination run wild. And we won't know the truth until the investigation yields more arrests. We see people named. We see people unmasked.
What about, as we jump ahead to part three, and this adoption agency, this quote unquote faith-based special needs adoption agency that these same-sex couple used to adopt the boys. And you also address the role that Georgia's child welfare system played in placing the children in an abusive household, and the lack of accountability. You name names. So talk a little bit about, I mean, the names are important, but just talk about how this could happen. And what about that adoption agency? What is that all about?
Yes. So the so-called Christian Special Needs Adoption Agency is now dissolved, but it was All God's Children Incorporated in Watkinsville, Georgia, and they served special needs children, which they categorized as older children, children who are part of a sibling pair who are bonded together and may have mental, emotional, behavioral disorders. And so the boys fit this characterization. A lot of times agencies use the special needs designation to receive more state funding as an incentive for families to adopt older children, children who have different issues. And so from what I saw in my investigation, it seems like the adoption process was expedited. The family member said they passed everything with flying colors. There was an event page for the adoption shower that said everything was moving along faster than expected. And so it makes me wonder, how can a previously accused child rapist go on to adopt not one, but two children with his newly wedded husband? It's just very mind-boggling. And hopefully we can see some kind of accountability. There's an Office of the Child Advocate. It's an independent oversight office that launches investigations, and maybe it could hold the state's Division of Family and Children's Services responsible, who is partly to blame. They are involved with the background checks and All God's Children. While it was private, it was a licensed child placing agency.
Do we know about the history of All God's Children? I mean, something would tell me that I have no facts on this. I mean, maybe the name was a good front for them. I mean, did they place other children who wound up in peril? Do you know? Do we know? And how could they just disappear since the arrests without any accountability?
Yes. So the agency, it dissolved last year, I believe, due to COVID, and based on screenshots of a private conversation that the family member provided, and this took place between Zachary and the former director of All God's Children Incorporated. Zachary was, of course, very saddened to see it was closing down, because apparently he and William were looking to adopt again, but this time a girl, and they wanted to refer them to a friend. And so that's very telling there. They preferred toddler age, 2 or 3, which sounded more like procuring than adopting. And so
they wanted a 2 to 3 year old girl.
Yes, they were very specific with what they were looking for.
Wow. All right. Again, so I know you said how you hope and there's a possibility these will be this adoption agency and the people who approve this adoption will be held accountable. But right now, is there any indication that that's the case? I mean, the people who ran that agency, we must know their names. You probably have them in the piece that I'm holding in my hand. Is there an investigation ongoing, a criminal investigation that you know of? I mean, are we anywhere near any kind of whether it's a grand jury or an indictment or whatever? Anything happening on that front?
Right now, it's looking like an apparent cover-up. Walton County Sheriff's Office, which I believe has a part to play here, since they were the ones who closed the 2011 case without a whole lot of investigation into it. They claimed they had different investigatory standards back then in 2011 when it came to child rape. And then now the Department of Family and Children's Services, they gave me a pretty vanilla statement, not directly naming All God's Children, just saying their relationship to such private agencies. And so now it looks like They're just patting themselves on the back for rescuing the children, but not admitting any kind of fault for placing them in harm's way to begin with. So hopefully this formal investigation could move forward with the Office of the Child Advocate, if it's truly an independent agency, that we could see some kind of criminal or civil remedies.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know anything about the area or the areas that were involved here or where these people lived. I mean, you named them, but I don't know anything about them. Stereotypically thinking, one would think that the law, the sheriff, kind of, you know, again, it's wrong to think stereotypically for anything, but one would think that they would be tough on this kind of thing, looking for this kind of thing, you know, maybe going overboard in the other direction to make sure that this doesn't happen. And when it does happen, really going crazy and making sure that these people who do it, again, we don't know if they did it, they're innocent until proven guilty, that people who are accused of doing something like this are made light of, and so it would never happen again. But it seems what you're saying, especially your request for the records for the 2011 arrests of Zachary, they wouldn't give them to you. It seems like it's going the other way.
Right. That's what it seems like to me, because what are you hiding? You could redact the victim's name if that's your concern. They're claiming that since they've reopened the case, it could affect the current investigation. But for a while, they weren't confirming if they were officially reopening it. They were using softer language, like, we're just looking back into it, we're reviewing the matter for now. And so I just wonder, could it just be a simple one-page police report with some police scribbles that just kind of shrugged off this incident of child sexual abuse?
All right, so let's talk about part four. And that is about life behind bars, what it's like for two accused child rapists in jail. You posted that just a little less than a week ago. What has happened to them so far, and what's the outlook for people like them that are convicted of the horrific charges, 17 charges? Just horrific acts against minor children.
Yes, so they're both being held separately as co-defendants and different county lockups. Of course, this is county jail, so it's pretrial detainment, and they're not doing so well. So I don't think they'd fare well in state prison if they're convicted. Zachary is experiencing what's called jailhouse justice, when there's a hierarchy in jail, and even murderers, drug dealers look down upon anyone who would harm a child. So he believes that he was drugged by his cellmate and has been threatened twice for snitching. So he's adding snitch to the list. And so he just wants to get out of there, but it doesn't seem like reality has hit him. He's pleaded for the lawyer to somehow get him out on bond, even though bond was denied. He's deemed a danger to children in the community, and rightfully so. And he thinks he can get an ankle monitor, and he still thinks he has the privilege of being freed. Meanwhile, William, who's lactose intolerant, he's complaining about milk at breakfast time. He is whining about soy patties for lunch and the quote low grade quality of the meat with the bologna and cheese sandwiches he's eating. So it's pretty funny to actually see these are materialistic narcissists.
Oh my God.
In jail.
Oh my God. So I guess William has suffered no, and I'm not rooting for anybody to, but I guess he hasn't experienced what Zach has experienced. He suffered no physical retribution, repercussions. And if he has, it seems he's still more concerned about having to drink milk and eat meat that he doesn't like. Which is it? Has he had no physical problems with other prisoners, or he's just not talking about it?
Yeah, I feel like if he had any kind of physical confrontations, he would whine about it first thing. And so right now he's complaining about the quote decrepit housing conditions in a jail. He thinks that he's staying at a Hilton hotel, and he's about to leave a 1-star Yelp review. So he's just in his own little world, and he can download digital books from the library on his tablet. So he seems like he's doing all right, other than he keeps wanting to pass love notes to Zachary through the family member, any family member who will listen to him, because he still believes they're on the same page. But I think Zachary is ready to get out however he can. So I think that's what the district attorney is hoping for, that they turn on each other, that they testify. Maybe one would take a plea deal. And so that's what we're going to look for.
Yeah, got to watch that spousal privilege thing, though. I think I'm not a lawyer, but that I'd be curious to know how that works out. One more question: the kids. I mean, so they're back in. They're just back in the system. I mean, I can't even imagine what they went through, and now they're back in the system, back living with other kids in some kind of facility or adoption center or however that works. I mean, there's no special place that they could be accommodated. And I don't even know. I'm just thinking out loud. It just seems a shame and inconceivable that after going through what they've been through, allegedly, that they just get put, back in the system. It's just horrible.
Yes. And it's sad to think that the state's child welfare system just see children as figures, just another number. And that's what seemed to have happened with these kids. Just get them off our hands. And so they were taken from their biological parents who were addicted to heroin. So they already came from a broken home. They're placed in this abusive household with two alleged pedophiles. And then they're back in foster care. The system is eating them again. The cycle is continuing. And this is the case, not just for these boys, but it's just so many children in America who are ripped from their homes because the state intervenes. And then a lot of them just age out. They never got to experience a safe, loving home. It's just very sad to see.
Absolutely. And the media blackout, as you called what I was describing as accurately earlier, are you surprised at all? I mean, because this, if I don't know, I'm tweaking it in my mind. I'm trying to make an analogy to a story that if it were the other way around, that I don't even know what the other way around is, except a straight couple from the sticks abusing two trans kids. I don't know. Maybe that would get the CNN type and mainstream media coverage. I don't know. Maybe that's a poor example, but to not have this story out there. And of course, the only reason is not to cast any kind of a poor image on anybody who's gay. It's just sickening.
Yes, you would think that especially local outlets would be closely following this case because it happened in their backyards. And this isn't the city. This isn't in the middle of Atlanta where human trafficking is a big issue, where human trafficking happens with the criminal underbelly. This was happening in an affluent suburban neighborhood. And it should really frighten middle-class America because human trafficking always just seemed more abstract, something that's so removed. And to think that it's happening really where there's white picket fence, where the children were going to public school every day.
Wow. Really, really sickening. Okay, listen, so promise me you have my number. I'll keep a lookout, although, I guess it would have to be through you because nobody else is covering it. I'm not saying that's a bad thing that it has to be through you, but it is a bad thing that nobody else is covering it. So if I miss something, if I don't reach out to you, please, if something happens, if when they have the hearing or whatever, reach out to me in anticipation. I'd love to keep myself and the audience up to date on everything as this goes along, because there's you're hard pressed to think of anything worse. Thank you very much, Mia. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'd love to come on again.
Good. Thank you. Mia Cathell, ladies and gentlemen, townhall.com investigative reporter here on the Steve Malzberg Show. Just what a story. What a story. And again, almost as big a story, if not, not bigger, if you could put aside the human aspect of it. Is that nobody's covering it. Nobody's covering this. An 11-year-old and a 9-year-old. And nobody cares. And we know why they don't care. We know exactly why they don't care. All right, folks, Steve Malzberg, we're coming back. A lot more ahead on TNT Radio.
You should hear what Patrick Henningsen's talking about.
Sweden's NATO bid is on the rocks. We saw this coming, and it is the most incredible series of events. It's almost like there was a hidden hand somewhere making this happen. I mean, the Swedish government, I guess in their bid to show how tolerant they are, even of their sort of ultra right-wing bloc, there was this protest outside the Turkish embassy in Stockholm, burning Korans and other things, some of them even worse. Now, why target Turkey? Sweden needs Turkey's bid. They need their vote for the NATO membership bid. It has to be unanimous. They need Turkish support. This is going to cause a rift in NATO. Looks like Finland, yeah, they might be sort of shoehorned in, but could Turkey drag their heels on Finland as well? Kurdish activists are basically making noise, present at the Turkish embassy protests. And then you have the sort of, quote, far right in Sweden. And they're just out to create a spectacle and kind of ramp up the anti-Islamist hate. So burning Korans, that's interesting. Imagine if Muslims turned up at the Swedish embassy or the U.S. embassy and burned Bibles. Would that go down well or not? I don't think it would go down very well. The Christian right would be calling for jihad at that point.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The Steve Malzberg Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, folks, let's move on from that story, but we will, obviously, as you heard me talk about with Mia, we will keep you informed. So this show will keep you informed as any details in that case break. And if they did it, so this show will keep you informed as any details in that case break. And if they did it, if those two did it, then they should rot in prison for the rest of their lives and then in hell for the rest of eternity. And those poor kids, I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine. It's just, yeah, my God. Okay, from a heroin household to them, and now back in the system, it's like, my God, what did these kids do to deserve that? All right, Facebook has reinstated Donald Trump. Yay! Oh boy, that's a great reaction from you folks. I didn't expect that. So, Bret Baier on the Fox News channel had on one of the vice presidents at Facebook. You may know the name. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. Nick Clegg, former deputy prime minister of the UK. Am I pronouncing it correctly as far as the studio knows? I hope so. Okay. I mean, I don't know how else to pronounce Klegg. So he was on, and Bret Baier asked him a whole bunch of questions about Trump and then about Facebook's role with the Hunter Biden story and getting rid of it and COVID and taking some stuff about COVID off. And so it was a very interesting interview. And here is cut 334.
You are ending the suspension of former President Trump on Facebook and Instagram. Why are you doing that now? And explain what's behind it.
So he was suspended for 2 years from using Facebook and Instagram, and that two-year clock expires now this month. And so we're confirming that if he wants to, he can, in the coming weeks, he can use Facebook and Instagram again. I mean, of course, there are guardrails, there are rules. He's got to play by the rules, and we're announcing some additional ones today to encourage him to stick to the rules that exist when people use Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah, well, we shall see. Look, there never was a reason for getting Donald Trump off of Facebook or Instagram. Look at the creeps that are on Facebook and on Instagram. Just like there was no reason to kick him off Twitter. I mean, you look at some of the people who I'm not going to go in. I'm not going to draw a list because I'm going to leave people out. But Donald Trump of a list of people on the top of my head was the least dangerous of all. Okay. In fact, you'll hear Bret Baier talk about a post that he put out on January 6th, calling for people to go home, calling for peace, peaceful protests, go home. So to say that they use posts of him from January 6th to justify taking him off, that's nonsense, too. So here's the next one. Cut 335.
At the end of the day, we believe the American people should hear from, including on our apps and services, from those who want to lead them. And he's a former president of this country, vying to be a candidate for the next presidential elections. And we don't really want to, all other things be equal, stand in the way. So we think it's right to let the 2-year suspension now expire. It's up to him and his team. If he wants to use Facebook and Instagram, he's now free to do so.
Yeah, I think he did. Or I mean, I don't care. I mean, it's not like I can't wait to read what Donald Trump has to write or post. That's not the point. The point is he should have a right to post it. He should have a right to post it. And all of a sudden, we're concerned about the American people having a right, because are you kidding me? All of a sudden, concerned about the American people's right to know, right to hear. Really? OK, where did that come from? Where did that come from? Some government agency tell you to do that and say that? Why do I not believe anything anymore from almost anybody? Gee, why am I so tainted? All you got to do is look what's going on. That's why I'm so tainted. All right, let's go to 336.
We've learned a lot about what the former president, then president, did on January 6th and did not do. I don't want to go too far down this road, but on Facebook, he posted on that day, "I'm asking everyone at the U.S. Capitol to remain peaceful, no violence. Remember, we are the party of law and order, respect the law and our great men and women in blue. Thank you." He posted, "We have to have peace, go home." I guess you look at other people who maybe still didn't get suspended on Facebook or Instagram, who have done or said other things. And I'm just trying to get a sense of where the community standards are for political speech and what you took from that day on that decision.
Yeah, I mean, like you, I don't think it helps to go through each and every single post that appeared that day. There are other posts which had a much more, at best, ambivalent message of support for those who did indulge in exceptional violence at the center of American democracy on that day.
Okay, I mean, yeah, I mean, there was. Look, I'm not going to start talking about January 6th, but that's his reasoning. That's his reasoning. Even though Donald Trump posted what you just heard Bret Baier and what I alluded to earlier post, well, he said other things, and it's not prudent to go into every single post. So they're not going to do it, I'm not going to do it. And I'm sure there were posts that might have been more inflammatory, but I'm sure there was nothing that said, go violently attack the Capitol. I'm sure there was nothing that said, go beat up anybody. I'm sure there was nothing that said, go be violent. I'm sure there was nothing like that at all from Trump. Okay, but he must have used code words, and that's what Facebook is talking about here. Here's another one. This is cut number 337.
Where we draw the line is, as a general principle, we're a private company, we're a private tech company, we're not a political entity, we don't try and make decisions which sort of, help or hinder one side or the other. We believe in free and open debate, particularly in the world's most powerful democracy, the United States. We're trying to strike the right balance between free expression, free and open political debate, whilst at the same time making sure that for all the users who use Facebook and Instagram, it's an enjoyable experience.
Got to be enjoyable. Must be an enjoyable experience. You're supposed to sit down there on Facebook and Instagram. And hey, Bret, you didn't ask about the breasts that will now be allowed reportedly on Facebook and Instagram. Only trans and, well, what's the other thing? Trans and non-binary breasts. Women, I must be a homophobe, I said women. Women born women who are heterosexual women. What do they call that? Cisgender? I don't even know. And I don't really care, to be quite honest with you. But real women's breasts? trans women's breasts, and what else did I say? And non-gendered, binary, right? That's non, that's nothing, that you're not either. Their breasts could go on Facebook and Instagram, but not women's breasts. Isn't that great? That's wonderful. I'm sorry that Brett didn't ask him about that. All right, let's get in two more before we take our break, and this will be the last two on the topic. He asked them about their role and what they did with the Hunter Biden laptop before the 2020 election. Now, we know from Mark Zuckerberg that the FBI came in and warned them about Russian disinformation and all this kind of stuff and how this fit the description of what the FBI had warned them about. Gee, what a shock. So let's see how he handles this. Cut 338.
But as far as stories, the Hunter Biden laptop story, the story of the COVID origins, did Facebook manipulate those or censor those as they were coming out?
So on the Hunter Biden story, other platforms, I think it was Twitter, sort of just deleted the story altogether. We didn't. You could still find the story. Millions of people did. But for 7 days, the prominence of the story was less for those 7 days. It's just part of the way our systems work to allow our fact checkers. We have a network of independent fact checkers to look at the story if they wanted to. They didn't. And after 7 days, that what's called in the jargon, that temporary demotion was taken off. So we didn't remove it. People could find it. Many people saw it on Facebook. We were simply following the rules by which our systems currently operate.
Funny, that's not what Mark Zuckerberg said. I mean, Zuckerberg said that they were told by the FBI to watch out for that, and that this fit the description of what the FBI had warned them about. Come on, we know what the media did, social media and other media, with the Hunter Biden story. We know exactly what they did. Here's the last one, 339.
We've seen Twitter in these Twitter file stories with extensive coordination with the federal government over political speech. How extensive was Facebook or Meta's coordination? And should the federal government have influence over speech on your platforms?
So look, if I understand it correctly, the Congress is going to look into this, look into, you know, the way that the executive branch does or doesn't try to kind of, you know, shape how companies operate. And, that seems to me completely right. We don't operate at the behest of what governments just sort of tell us from one moment to the next. Part of my job is to interact with governments day in, day out around the world. And I can tell you, most of the time, they're immensely frustrated that we don't do what they tell us. Of course, you know, they're free to reach out to us. We need to work with governments, and we are a law-abiding company around the world. But at the end of the day, we try and be crystal clear about where we draw the line.
Yeah, okay. Okay. He's not fooling me. I'm not saying he's lying. I'm saying he's talking a good game. But yet we know what happened. And the way he handled that question about government influence, to me, it was very, very telling. He did not do a good job of hiding what I believe to be the truth. And we saw it in action with Hunter Biden, with people who get banned, and with COVID. It just outrageous. Just outrageous. All right. We have one more segment to go. By the way, tomorrow's Friday, and we have, as usual, no guest. Don't spread it around. We have no guest. So we'll have plenty of time to get a lot of great stuff in, as usual. I'm Steve Malzberg on TNT Radio.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Don't miss the forest for the trees. The real story today isn't whether Alec Baldwin's Spanish wife, Elaria, is actually from Spain. Of course she isn't. She's Hillary Lynn Hardway Thomas from Weston, Massachusetts. She's as American as Alec is. And the real story of the day isn't whether Damar Hamlin was really at the Bills game. It was probably a body double. Maybe it wasn't. Who knows? Who cares? The real story of the day isn't even that Mike Pence rushed to Joe Biden's rescue in the document scandal by conveniently finding some classified documents in his own house. Funny that he didn't rush to President Trump's defense, finding documents in his own house. No, the real story of the day is the absolute clown world that we're told to believe in, that anybody with half an ounce of common sense knows is completely false. But that's the Democrat Party today. Up is down, left is right, and right is wrong. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you prevent wildfires.
Dude, I've got this. I've been camping since I was 5 years old.
But I am a camping influencer.
You know what? I'll bet you $5. Assistant Smokey, what is the best way to put out a campfire?
To put out a campfire, drown with water, stir, drown again. Then make sure the fire is out cold by feeling with the back of your hand.
Wait, really?
I'll take the $5.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Steve Malzberg on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I was waiting for Smokey to say, remember, only you could prevent forest fires. Remember that? Oh, yeah. Grew up with that. Smokey Bear. All right. Steve Malzberg, back with you. Joe Scarborough had a very interesting outburst. I believe it was this morning, Thursday morning, on Scarborough Country on MSNBC. And very, very interesting indeed. This is via Newsbusters. And it's about COVID. And I think he was telling people they better get their fourth booster. Is it fourth booster? Look, I shouldn't laugh. I've heard stories about people who laugh and say they don't take the shot. And then God forbid they pass away. At least that was the case early on. I've had two boosters. I've had two shots back in early to mid 2020. And then I had 2021. Yeah, there was nothing in 2020, 2021. And then I had a booster in December of 2021. And I've not had anything since except COVID, which I did not have until last December of 2022. Anyway, still got congestion, unfortunately, but it's not debilitating. So listen to this from Scarborough. It's like seems to be out of nowhere. I guess he's referring to something he read or saw or someone he heard saying don't take the booster. But here is cut 328.
I'm just going to do this as a public service announcement to those people who actually love their children and love their families and their friends and want them to be healthy. You know, yesterday when I was talking about getting COVID and should have gotten a fourth booster shot, a lot of these freaks go, oh, fourth booster shot, robot. No, listen, here's the deal, moron. If you get a flu shot, what do? Do you go to the doctor? Oh, my God, you want me to have a 50th flu shot? No, you get a flu shot every year.
Right.
And as we're finding out with this pandemic, well, it lasts 6 months, maybe a year. So, yes, put on your big boy pants, put on your big girl pants. And if you want to be healthy, I don't care. If you don't, that's your business.
First of all, a very small percentage of Americans get a flu shot. Joe. Did you hear Mika go? Oh, that made her morning. Little Mika chuckled at Joe as she looked lovingly at him, lovingly at the man that she left her husband for. I mean, comparing it to the flu shot is really dumb. There's no comparison. We don't yet know the long-term effects of the COVID vaccines or boosters, do we, Joe? How could we, Joe, since it's only a couple of years old and these new boosters, by definition, they change. They're different. They're not the same as the other shots. So we don't know the long-term effects. But he compares it to a flu shot that really, I think it's 35, maybe, I think it's under 40. percent of Americans get a flu shot every year. Okay. I don't remember, again, I shouldn't say it, but I don't remember the last time I got a flu shot. I'll tell you a story real quick. Two separate doctors, fine doctors, their wives worked in the office. three of the four people I'm talking about passed away, so may they rest in peace. But my GP would always say, "You want your flu shot? You want your flu shot?" Every year, I'd say, "No." What do you mean, no? You know, he'd fool around with me. And his wife, who worked in the office, said, "Come here. I wouldn't get the flu shot." And then, either then or before, not right then, in, you know, different year, a cardiologist, his wife, same thing. The cardiologist, I said, "You want to give me a flu shot?" To the, he says, "Yeah, I give him." I said, no. He says, "Why not?" I said, so the wife heard, and she says, "He tells that to me all the time. I've never taken a flu shot." I love it. But anyway, may they rest in peace. I'm not going to say their names. Anyway, here's the next cut from Scarborough. Cut number 329.
My concern, Rev, is that there's a disinformation out there where people are saying, "Oh, well, it doesn't work because you've got to keep getting booster shots." The thing is, you're always trying to build up your immunity, and people are still dying from COVID. Is it a crisis right now? Well, for the people who are dying of COVID, yeah, it's a crisis. Is it as bad as it's been? No. But as a doctor explained to me when I didn't want to get flu shots, you're not just doing it for yourself, Joe. You're doing it for everybody.
All right. Again, with the doing it for everybody. Really? Haven't we been through this? First of all, you know who he's talking to when he said Rev? Al Sharpton. That medical expert about to weigh in on this, the Reverend Al Sharpton. Oh, please. What a clown show. I'm telling you. Oh, my God. Dr. Scarborough to Dr. Sharpton. Please educate us on the booster, the latest booster. Oh, my goodness. All right. Just wanted to get that in there. Very bizarre. But Mika laughed. So if it makes Mika happy, it's all worth it. You understand? Got to keep the woman who left her husband for you happy. Okay. Now, somebody who's not too happy is a very well-known quarterback in the National Football League who might wind up with the New York Jets if the Packers and the Jets could arrange a trade. Aaron Rodgers. He blames Big Pharma for orchestrating his villainization, as he put it, because don't forget, back in 2021, he said that he was immunized and people took it to mean he was vaxxed and he wasn't. He took ivermectin. And so that once that came out, the media, you know, went nuts. He blames Big Pharma. Here he is talking about it. Here's cut 313.
There's heroes and villains in sports and entertainment. And I think because of my stance on COVID and maybe some other things, I've been cast as the villain, especially the last few years. And so that is the way that, you know, a lot of things I said are often interpreted. I'm not upset about that. I don't feel like a victim in any way. I don't have that mentality. That's fine. I actually embraced that role a little bit. If that's how you want to cast me. But I did see there were some comments that, you know, I'm only playing for MVPs and yes. Stuff like that. Didn't maybe quite see the entire clip of some of the stuff that I said. I don't care about that stuff. It doesn't offend me. I mean, this culture, this woke culture wants to be offended by everything. You just go online and find something you don't agree with. I'm offended. How could you possibly say that?
Yeah. Well, hey, by the way, this is on the Pat McAfee show. Here's cut 314.
If you take the right sound bite from the right thing, you know, and it's a station that may or may not have in the past been brought to you by Pfizer, then they got to make sure that their villain, you know, gets cast in the correct light. And whether or not they're, you know, sponsored by Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, whatever it might be.
What?
When you go up against some of those powers that be, you put yourself in the crosshairs, you know, they're going to paint you in a certain way. And that's what the media did to me a couple of years ago. That's fine. That's their prerogative. That's what they wanted to do. But I think I responded, you know, pretty good in those times. And I'm glad I went through that. And anything that comes after that, small potatoes.
All right. I want to get to not Tony Dungy. Well, I don't know if I have time to. Herm Edwards. Herm Edwards, ESPN, former NFL head coach, talking about the Dallas Cowboys tweet that threw Dak Prescott, the Dallas quarterback, under the bus after they lost. Here's what he had to say about all that. Here's cut 284. Okay. Well, we don't have time. We will do it. We will do that one tomorrow. See, you already have something worth tuning in for tomorrow. to hear from Herm Edwards. Believe me, he wasn't too happy with what the Cowboys did to Dak Prescott. And who could be? I mean, they really threw him under the bus. All right, folks. I hope you are as ticked off as I am about that interview we did and those two poor kids and those two accused pedophiles. And again, if they did it, let's hope and pray justice is served. I'll see you tomorrow, same time. Tell your friends, tell your enemies. I'm Steve Malzberg on TNT Radio.